A few weeks ago, we kicked off a new series called Profiles, where we sit down for extended conversations with people in our community. Our producer, Joe Lindstroth, is here with one woman's remarkable story.
You know, late last month, Mark, the EEOC, the Equal Opportunity Employment Commission, filed a discrimination suit against a Michigan funeral home in Garden City. The funeral home is accused of firing a transgender employee for coming out and presenting herself as a woman. The lawsuit, along with another one in Florida, are the first in the nation under the EEOC since 2012 to announce a lawsuit protecting transgender folks under existing federal law. So this is one of the initial lawsuits. According to statistics, Mark, transgender people make up about 2 to 5% of the population, but they're much more likely to be discriminated against. They face rejection from employers, churches, and their families. Rates of suicide and sexual assault among transgender people are also elevated. This past spring, I had a really rare opportunity to sit down with a young woman to find out what it was actually like for one transgender person to undergo that transition of being from a man to a woman. Mm. Cadence Custon is a third-year law student in MSU's College of Law. She grew up in a small town in Southwest Virginia, right near the famed Martinsville Speedway for NASCAR fans out there. Before she arrived in East Lansing, Cadence had lived her entire life as a male. We talked for quite a while. This is the edited version, of course. And the conversation started with a simple description of what the process of transitioning actually entails for a transgender individual.
Transitioning in regards to transgender individuals is when one changes the outward presentation of one's body to match one's inner gender identity, which for instance, with individuals who were assigned male at birth, but who identify personally as female, that may entail taking hormones to have breast growth, to have hair reduction, though facial hair never really goes away. You have to have instead laser treatment or electrolysis, which literally burns the roots of the hair to the point where they don't grow back. For individuals who were assigned female at birth and identify as male, that might entail having a bilateral mastectomy, which is the removal of the breasts, as well as injection of testosterone, which will induce facial hair growth.
Now, that's the physical aspect of transitioning, but there's a lot more to it than that.
Of course.
There has to be an emotional, spiritual, social aspect to transitioning as well. Describe a little bit of that.
For myself, there was a lot of mannerisms that I really had to learn, and or in the case of some, relearn, that are completely different between the two popular genders that most people aren't really aware of. For instance, when speaking, males tend to speak with a more monotone voice, and they don't fluctuate a lot in pitch, whereas female would. There's also an internal part as well in regards to, I would say, even identifying with oneself. You can feel that you, for instance, in my case, I felt that I should have been born female, but I still have to fight myself sometimes with reconciling the fact that sometimes things feel more male and I don't want them to be when I do something. And I, for instance, if I were to let my voice slip and let the pitch drop, I would actually be internally upset with myself. And I think that's a struggle that you have to go through, because it's reconciling. It's the same internal struggle I think that a lot of people go through. It's just on a whole another level, really.
What I'm hearing is an identity struggle that you pointed out that everyone goes through, and kind of reconciling with how you feel about yourself versus how others view you. How is that elevated when you're going through something like the transition?
Well, I think that initially when you're first beginning transition, that there is a lot of internal struggle with what you know you want to do and how you know society is going to treat you. For instance, when I first began transitioning, when I came to law school, I wasn't very good, I feel personally, in how I projected myself as being female. I did a lackluster job. I didn't really have properly styled hair, et cetera. These stupid little things that mattered a lot to me, but to society, those are the kind of things that are the identifying factors of an individual as being female. And so there's a struggle with what you want yourself to be, like, you know, the perfect ideal thing, and what you actually can achieve and what you're doing.
It's been a year and a half.
Yes.
You know, since you decided to make the full public transition.
That's correct.
To how you identify yourself as a female. How has it been going?
I feel it's been going very well, all things considering. I think I've got a definite number of boons in my favor. I am particularly proud of how well I've done with my voice, though even still, I like to nitpick on myself and wish that it could be even better sometimes.
So you're going to listen to this interview and nitpick it.
I'm going to be listening to myself and I'll be like, oh, I should have sounded just a little bit different.
Let me give you a little hint. We do that as well on the other side.
Otherwise, I mean, there's certain changes. It's funny, like, in regards to how the transition is going, I mean, I think that I've been a lot more connected with the people around me. I used to have very few friends that I considered to be true, true friends. And I've got a much higher number of that now. I don't have an exact number off the top of my head, but I would at least say it's doubled or tripled. And I say in part that that's at least due to the fact that I'm really me. Now, as before, there was, you know, a certain amount of reservation always with what was I really willing to tell my friends. And now it's out in the open. It's a very refreshing feeling.
Were there things that you weren't prepared for?
I mean, first and foremost, I think that there is no way one can really prepare for being called out. In terms of, you know that at some point in your life, it's probably going to happen, but it's another thing entirely once you're in the moment and it's happening.
And what do you mean called out?
Called out as someone were to ID me as having not always been female, as being a trans woman.
Is there a situation that you're referring to?
The first time that this occurred, it wasn't actually that bad. It was rather tame, all things considering. It was with a person who I now consider a friend. When we were at the conclusion of the first week of school, and we had gone out to a bar to celebrate, which is funny because I don't normally go for that type of thing, but we'd gone out, and I don't really even know how it came up in conversation, but, you know, at some point, I think the question was asked, you know, were you always female? And I answered truthfully, because I didn't want to lie, that no, in fact, I had been born male. And it was fine because she was 100% okay with it. It was more for the sake of curiosity that she asked, but it was still a scary moment to have realized that, well, that was seen through, as it were. It's an uncomfortable feeling.
How is it dealing with the public, with the overly curious people, and frankly, those who are rude or even worse?
Over time, I'd say, gotten a lot more comfortable with it, to the point where I generally don't mind if people ask questions that might otherwise be considered invasive. I don't mind going into the details about what happens, for instance, with one's genitalia, how it impacts one's sexual preferences, etc. That being said, there are some individuals who can ask the questions in rude ways that really signal that they're not interested really in the answer, that they're just looking for something to make fun of. Thankfully, I haven't had anyone who's gone to that level, though I would be a fool to bet against it not happening at some point in my life.
You know, you mentioned the genitalia, and in doing research for our conversation, I came across many transgender people get frustrated with people's preoccupation with genitalia.
Mm-hmm.
Is that been your experience?
Yes, I would say so. I don't have a hard number, but I would be willing to say that of the number of conversations I've had where I've explained what it means to be transgender, genitalia has come up in, if not all of them, at least 95% of them. It's a question I think that comes up a lot because while there are some other identifying characteristics for what makes one a male or female, there is nevertheless this hard line where do you have a penis and do you have a vagina? Where if you have one, then you're that. If you have that, then you're the other. And that's simply not the case with transgender individuals. It's a matter of how one feels internally.
I'm Joe Lindstroth, and I'm speaking with Cadence Custin. She's an MSU law student and an activist for transgender issues here on campus about her experience transitioning from a man to a woman. How have your relationships with your family been impacted by this decision?
Things have been tense with my parents, especially at first. There was a lot of religious concerns regarding the idea that God made me male and therefore I surely must be male, to which I would answer that God made me a male body, but that I felt, and he made it so, or they made it so rather, I should say, that I was female inside. Sorry, I prefer third gender pronouns for God. With my father in particular, that was a big issue. My mother is coming around a bit more. They still typically call me by my old name, which I've spoken with them about as upsetting me. And as I explained to them, the reason it upsets me is I understand that they named me that initially, and that to them I was that young boy. But as I explained to my mother when I had this conversation with her, to me that person was a mask. And the real person who I am, Cadence Custin, was underneath that. And so when I'm called that name, it makes me feel as though the person who was loved was the mask that I've thrown away and wasn't really me, which sounds really complicated, and it kind of is, but that's how I honestly feel about the matter. Things have been better with my extended family. I haven't had a whole lot of direct interaction with them, but on the whole, my cousins have been generally okay. Same goes for aunts, uncles, grandparents.
You have a brother.
Yes.
Who also is transgender.
Yes, he's a trans man, which means that he was born and assigned female at birth and has transitioned to being male. And my brother has been wonderful, obviously, as he is going through a similar experience.
Who began their transition first, you or your brother?
My brother did.
So he blazed the trail a little bit for
you. He did. In fact, I was pleased as punch when I heard, because admittedly, I was thinking internally, well, that makes my life just a little bit easier. Not that much, but a little bit easier. At least it's been broken to the parents once before. He began his transition, I want to say it was, I don't have a firm date, honestly, but I want to say sometime in around 2009, 2010.
I'm Joe Lindstroth, and I'm speaking with Cadence Custin. She's an MSU law student and an activist for transgender issues here on campus. Backing up, when you were trying to explain to your mother how you felt about being called your old name,
mm-hmm.
how did she take that? Was she able to understand what you were saying?
I get the feeling that she did, because first and foremost, because she said she understood. Though, honestly, that I think the real proof is in the pudding, as it were, and that our interactions since then have been a lot better, that I've been called Cadence at least once. I don't talk to her extremely often, but I do talk with her often enough that we've had a couple of conversations, and I feel that she's got, that she understands where I'm coming from, and that what she's dealing with at this point is her own feelings, because understandably she has an attachment to the original image of me as male. But I think that she's starting to appreciate that, regardless of her attachment for the previous male image of me, that in truth, I am her daughter.
What is your hope for your family situation?
I don't have anything firm and fast in my head, I suppose. I know that it's never quite going to be the same. Though that's honestly a good thing, because in truth, they're dealing with the real us and not just who they thought we were. My hope would be that at some point there won't be any real concern over this type of thing anymore. It'll just be a thing of the past, that I'll be their daughter, Alex will be their son, that they'll happily come to things like our weddings, if we ever have children, anniversaries or whatever, you know, these life events, that they'll want to be a part of that with who we are and not who we were.
Looking back, Cadence, when did you know you were different from your peers?
I don't really have a first particular memory of when I began to cross-dress, other than I know that I enjoyed it when I was young, and that the opportunities I got to do it were whenever my parents would leave together with my brother, then sister, and leave me alone in the house, that I would have that free time where I could do that activity without being discovered. I didn't really have a name for what I did or really understood why I did it at first. I first was introduced to the fact that my parents didn't approve of what I was doing when we were staying at a hotel for a weekend. It was a family event in Atlanta. And so happened that there was a cross-dressing convention at the hotel that weekend. And we rode the elevator from our room down to the basement where the ballroom was, the event was. And the ladies, or I'm sorry, I should say the gentlemen who were dressed in feminine clothes, who they got off the elevator at some point. And when they did, my parents pulled myself and my brother aside and asked us if we had noticed anything odd about those people who'd been on the elevator. I don't really remember what I answered, but I do remember that they followed that up with explaining what cross-dressing was and how it was, quote-unquote, immoral, and it was against what God wanted, etc., etc. And all I could think, of course, was, as my parents were describing what cross-dressing was, oh, you mean that thing that I do when y'all are away from home? And so that was a sobering moment, because it was the first time that I realized that despite assurances that your parents love you no matter what, there are sometimes limits.
How old were you when you were in that elevator with your parents?
I want to say I was 12. I was not that old. I was definitely in middle school. So 12, 13, somewhere in and around that age.
When you were in that elevator with your parents in Atlanta, and that was the first moment when you realized, oh, there are other people who do this as well.
Yes.
What was that like to discover that there's other people, there are specific words, maybe later you learned gender dysphoria, to describe what you were feeling?
It was, granted, there was, as I said, that sobering experience with my parents, but independent of that, I was elated to find out that that I was not, as I thought at the time, a freak, because, you know, I had been raised religiously and I had obviously been indoctrinated with this idea that how I felt was wrong, not just on a societal level, but on a religious, spiritual level. And the idea, you know, that there were other people spurred me to research it more, which was possible thanks to the invention of the internet. well, not the invention of so much as my introduction to it, I should say. And as you said, yeah, I did. I learned all these different terms, and I realized through my research that how I felt wasn't that I wanted to be a crossdresser, which is someone who identifies as male and just happens to want to wear female clothing. I actually wanted on a primal level to be female. That meant I was transgender.
For you, Cadence, what is your identity? How do you see yourself?
I see myself as a thankfully still young woman who is open and honest with her friends, enjoys the opportunities that have opened up for me. I like who I am now. I don't have many reservations. I mean, there's still things that I want to change about myself, if I'm being honest. But compared to how I felt in the past, I'm very, very happy with who I am now.
Why are you doing this? You've been so generous in sharing your life and your experience, and you didn't have to. Why share your life with the public here?
Part of it, first and foremost, thank you for having me. I think that part of what the public needs to see about transgender individuals is that we are human, that we have lives, we have struggles that are similar to everyone that they already know, who is perfectly happy with how their gender and their sex are in alignment. And my hope, I guess, was that by doing this interview and by showing the world that, hey, here's someone who's just like you in a lot of ways, that I could help inspire people to look more into the issues that surround being transgender, what they can do to be more open and accepting, and that they maybe I might also inspire other individuals who are still struggling with whether they themselves are willing to transition, that maybe they've been held back because of fear of this or that reason, and that maybe I could help be that inspiration.
Cadence Custin is an MSU law student and an activist for transgender issues. We've been speaking about her experience transitioning from a man to a woman. Cadence, thank you for sharing your story with us.
Thank you for having me, Joe.
For Current State, I'm Joe Lindstroth.
And a quick note, this interview was recorded earlier this spring. Since then, she reports her relationship with her mother has improved greatly and that her mom now regularly calls her by her chosen name, Cadence Custin.